Welcome to the Mother Love Podcast. This is Claire Larson, your host, and this project was made possible because of the support of Healthy Mothers, Healthy Babies, the Montana Coalition. Mother Love was created to promote healing, connection, and shared wisdom through stories. Like any given day spent parenting, each episode brings a balance of tears, laughter, wonder, and surrender. When it comes to parenting, no one should go it alone. On Mother Love, we see you. We hear you. We're in this together. Hi, Mother Love listeners. I'm really honored to be here with two women who work so hard at the Montana Women's Prison and to record an episode about the work that they do to support, specifically to support moms and families across the state. So I'm here with Kendra Miller. And Kendra is the director of parenting at the Montana Women's Prison. And then Warden Hansen. And she's obviously the boss lady for the prison. And I'm really grateful for both of you being here today because I know how incredibly busy you must be. So thanks for being here. Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, so we'll just kind of dive in, I think, is the best way to start. And maybe we can talk a little bit about the work that each of you do. If you would just sort of describe, maybe starting with you, Warden Hansen, kind of the work that you do and a little bit about your background of how you got to the position that you are now.
Absolutely. So I started in the world of probation and parole. I was the institutional probation and parole officer here at the women's prison for about 5 years. And then went out and was a probation and parole officer in the community, moved into a probation and parole supervisor position, and then was the first Eastern Bureau Chief for Probation and Parole Division, covering the eastern side of Montana and some of central Montana. And then 6 years ago, I got the opportunity to become the warden at the women's prison, which is one of my favorite jobs I've ever had and one of the most rewarding jobs that I've ever had. I love my job. I love coming to work every single day, so...
That's awesome. What do you think is the, now that you are where you are, what do you think are some of like the top things that when you wake up in the morning, you're most excited to go in and see or witness or be a part of?
Probably the number one thing is my day is never the same 2 days in a row. And you couldn't even predict it because we're working with females every day. So even the best laid intentions will change because of human beings. Whether it's the staff or whether it's the actual inmates, I just never have the same day twice. So it's fun to get up in the morning and think, I wonder what today's challenge is going to be.
Yeah.
And I wonder what kind of difference we as not only the prison, but me in particular in this building every day, what kind of difference can you make?
Yeah.
What can you make on your staff or on the inmates? Where are you going to be at the end of the day?
Yeah, that's so cool. I love that. And then when going way back into your background, I'm always curious, like when you were a kid and people ask you like, what do you want to be when you grow up? An astronaut or, you know, like a fireman, a doctor? Was there anything about the way that you inherently were as a kiddo that you feel like was like hinting at the type of work you do now?
When I was little, I wanted to grow up and be a nun.
Okay.
As I got older, I knew I wanted to do something in corrections, whether it was law enforcement, whether it was something with FBI, something with forensic science, something. I had the opportunity to go to school in Leavenworth, Kansas, where there's 5 prisons in a 5-mile radius, from a federal prison to a state prison to a county, big jails. And it was at that time that I just said, someday I'm going to be a warden. Someday I want to run a prison.
Yeah.
And just so happened, it's now I get to be a warden.
Yeah, that's amazing. I can't ever imagine having that thought for myself. That's why we're all different, right? I can't imagine being like, oh, that would be something I'd be so good at. Like, because it wouldn't. For sure.
My mother still thinks I'm a little crazy. Why do you want to be that? Can't you go back to being a nun?
Yeah, that's a vastly different career path that you decided to take. Yeah.
I must have been a 10-year-old mind compared to a 20-year-old mind.
Although sometimes I do wonder if nuns feel like they are in prison, you know, on a bad day. So, yeah. Yeah. And then what about, how about you, Kendra? What's some of your work history and kind of some background for you?
Well, I've worked at a few different organizations where I did home visits and supervised visits for the past 20 years. I've been a part of CPS. I was there for 5 years. And then have been here for almost 5 years on a part-time basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And kind of same question, like, what do you feel like really drives you, like, on a heart level in doing this work?
I am a very much, I'm very empathetic. I am very sensitive to a lot of the stuff that goes on around here. I want to make a difference. I want, even if it's, like I always say, even if you just take one little thing from me, even if you come back, like, even if, we can just make a difference. It's just making a difference.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. Do you ever get to see the families who you work with, like, out after they've recovered and gotten better and reunited out in the community? What's that like?
Yeah, I absolutely have. It's very rewarding. I just saw somebody this weekend, and she came up and gave me a hug and was just excited to tell me how good she's doing and, you know, to make sure that I tell her that I'm proud of her. And, you know, I love the impact that I have on some people. So that's awesome.
Yeah, that must be so amazing to see. Yeah. And you must get really close to people. I mean, you know, all professional things considered, it's such personal work to do that kind of healing.
It really is. Yeah. It really is. You're dealing with their kids and their sadness and their trauma. Right. And their, it's sometimes on your knees heavy, you know?
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
We still are a small town. So we can see people that have been at the women's prison, whether we're in Missoula, I've walked into a hotel in Helena and there's one of our ex-inmates is working there. And so we get to not just see them out in the Billings community, but we can see them because they all come here. We're the only women's prison. They all come from all over the state. I have had coffee with girls on the eastern side of the state that I never thought I'd see again, but
that's so cool.
A small town.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true. That's a saying that we hear all the time. And I do find, I was just in Missoula this past weekend and I saw two Helena people and it's like, it feels like every time I go to Missoula, I'm like, wait a minute, why would I bump into Helena people just randomly, you know, in the same place? So it's funny. Okay. And then let's move on to the next little question, which is, I guess, could you each give us kind of a snapshot of a typical, I know every day is different, but kind of like a typical day in the life of each of you? You know, I know you do similar work, but you both have very different roles that you play. So maybe you could talk about just like a normal average day. What does your day look like?
Well, and I would like to say, I don't think we do similar work. I think Warden Hansen has way heavier stuff on her than I do. But my typical day looks like I have, you know, usually starting off with either supervised visits. I have a board full. If you could see my board in my office, every half an hour, it's usually lined up with Zoom calls for the kids that live farther away. I've got classes going on 4 days of the week, two hour increments. So that's kind of my day, is just supervising visits, doing the Zooms, then having the ladies come down for advocacy and having them, you know, we're reaching out to the attorneys or their social workers or trying to get visits set up when we have caregivers that are not interested in, you know, wanting the kids to talk to mom. Then we try to, you know, advocate for them. And so that is my day.
Yeah.
It's constant. Even though I have things lined up almost every half an hour, there's somebody always popping in. I have kind of a line or, you know, people lined up to come in to make a quick phone call or to talk to me real quick or ask me a question. So
yeah.
It's wow. Every single day.
Well, it must like fly by, I imagine.
It really does. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really good work. I love it.
Yeah. That's great. Is it hard sometimes to keep those calls to 30 minutes? Like everyone knows that they're 30 minutes, but I imagine it's like sometimes hard to be like, okay.
Some of them when they've just started or when they haven't had contact in 3 years and all of a sudden they get their first Zoom, those are harder to, because both on both ends, it depends, I guess, the age of the child. But for the most part, it's because we are back to back. So they'll look over and they'll go, okay, the next person's here. I got to get off. They kind of know the rules.
Okay. And then switching to you.
Yeah, I would say that mine is a whole lot broader day.
Yeah.
Just because I'm in charge of a lot of things in this prison. Normal day-to-day is first like the safety and security of this entire building, not just for the staff and for the inmates here, but for the community. When you're located in downtown Billings, you have to pay attention to what's occurring on the other side of the street. You know, we're right next door to the Chamber of Commerce, so I have to maintain the mentality that we have to maintain the safety in Billings as well as the safety inside these walls as well. So my day can go from sitting in a staff meeting to advocating for the women's prison with legislation. My favorite days are days when I get to walk down the hall to parenting. And just last week, we had a inmate who has been in and out of here several times. I have known her for the last 10 years in some correctional aspect. And she is getting contact with her three-year-old. Is she three now?
Two.
Two-year-old?
Two, yeah.
And, oh my gosh, she's the cutest thing. And that's one of my favorite parts of all of my days. Yeah. I got to watch her, meet her, play with her, watch her throw a ball. I also am like the aunt that goes into parenting. I like to stir up trouble because I can walk away.
Yeah.
They had a ball bin full of balls, and I was telling her to throw them all over parenting because then Kendra has to come up.
Well, that's so nice of you. Yeah. But there has to be a lot of joy in those kinds of interactions, I bet.
Joy to see in the mom's face. At that moment in time, she is not an inmate, staff's inmate. She is a mom introducing her child to me, and I get to see and hear about all of the cute things she does. And the, you know, when you talk to a mom and they're bragging about their kids, I get to experience that from a normalization of a mom, not an inmate, but a mom. Me or kid, and that's probably my favorite days. I don't get to do it as often as Kendra does, but those are my favorite days.
Yeah, it's such a universal thing to be able to connect like mom to mom. Even if circumstances are really, really different, it's like we all understand what it feels like to want to do well as a mother, you know? And so I imagine when you get to connect on that level, it's like a really different, unique, special kind of interaction.
Well, and sometimes that's the only success that those women get to share with somebody inside these walls is the success of their child, because they're obviously not successful in what they have been doing. Not that they can't be successful going forward, but for that moment, they get to share that success with a staff member, with people who tell them what to do all day long. So it's a fun moment. It's a practical moment for them. And I'm glad I get to share that with them. And
So one kind of interesting question that I thought of just this morning was, I feel like there are a lot of misperceptions about what things are like inside of a prison, right? We mostly, all of us, just have mainstream media or like, you know, shows on Netflix or whatever we've seen. But many people have not had the experience to really know what goes on and what the culture is really like. And so I wondered if you guys could share, like, what's the difference between what you, like, when you're, you know, when you're an expert at something and you're watching a movie and they're portraying it and you're like, oh my God, like, that's not, that's so far off. Like, what are some of the things that you see like that, that just drive you bonkers, that are like, you know, stereotypes or things that are
all
portrayed?
All of it. So I'll tell you a typical day in the life as an inmate at the Montana prison. So I try really hard, and my staff try really hard to run this prison as trauma-informed as we can, because 90% of our women have been in some kind of trauma situation, some kind of abusive situation. So we work really hard at being trauma-informed. We also work very hard at, this is their home. We just come and visit every day, but this is their home. So a typical day, They are awake or able to come out of their cells at 6 a.m. We start feeding breakfast time, and they eat in different shifts because we're a small facility, so we don't have enough room for all 250 of them to eat at the same time. So they can come to breakfast starting around 6:30 or 7, depending on when their meal time is. And we do all of our own cooking, so it's all fresh baked or fresh cooked.
Oh, that's awesome.
Breakfast just depends. You can always tell if we're having donuts because there'll be a whole bunch of them in the cafeteria, or when it's oatmeal because there won't be very many of them in there. But they have the choice on whether or not they want to come to breakfast or not come to breakfast. 8 o'clock is when everybody goes to work or to classes or to school. So we are currently doing college classes through Dawson Community College and through MSUB. So school time for the college girls start, but at the same time, school time for the HISET girls start. All of our court-ordered or parole board mandated or even volunteer classes start, everything from substance use to parenting to mental health classes. And that's when everybody goes to work too. So we have 180 positions in here that they can apply for and work on their choice. We don't make anybody work. That's totally up to them. Everything from a cook to a janitor to Montana Correctional Enterprises has several opportunities in here where they can work on the dog pod. They can learn how to screen print. They can learn how to do sublimation. We have sewers in here. So everybody goes to work.
That's cool. Yeah.
At 11-ish, it's lunchtime. So different pods go and eat lunch. And again, you can eat lunch or you can not eat lunch. Mm-hmm. Every day at lunch and dinner, we have a salad bar. So even if you don't want what the main meal is, you can at least have a salad bar. The only time when it will, if you're in here and you really will think that it's prison-like TV, is during count time. So at that time, you line up and we make sure that everybody that's supposed to be here is here. Mm-hmm. And that's really the only, during the daytime, that's only really what you see on TV, typical prison time.
Yeah.
And then we start again after lunch, going back to work, going back to classes, going back to maybe they're in the chapel learning how to play guitars. Maybe they're in the hobby room making hobby, or maybe they're in the yard playing volleyball or softball or walking in a snow hill. It just kind of depends. We start then again at dinner time. We feed them all dinner and then we have a shift change. So once again, maybe stereotypical, they're all put away in their rooms and their cells so that we can change a guards. Mm-hmm. And then after dinner, there's a lot of volunteer activities. We have over 250 volunteers that come in from the community to do anything and everything you can think of. So the women have every opportunity to go to a church activity, go to an AA activity, NA. We have people that come in and teach them how to knit. We have people that come in and do just a small gathering of sit around and visit. We have Native American services where they come in and learn how to bead, or they do a sweat, or they do a smudging. And it is really a full day.
Yeah.
From morning until they all go to bed.
Yeah. Wow.
There really isn't it's not like it is on TV. There's no riots happening in here. There's no crazy.
Yeah.
We are, one of the trauma-informed things that we do is we are in two-piece clothing. Uh-huh. So we are not orange and black striped.
Yeah, suits. Right.
That's not what people wear. It is on TV, but we don't do that.
Yeah.
They're normal khaki pants and a maroon shirt. They look just like Target workers.
Yeah. That's even for me, that's so different than I would have imagined. It's amazing. Yeah. It sounds really therapeutic, actually.
We're hoping it is, but still that, they do have a schedule and they do have to follow a schedule, but for some of these women, that is the first time they've had a structured environment.
Yeah, totally.
And it helps them be successful. If I know what I'm supposed to do throughout the day, I am much more successful than just a random Saturday where...
Yeah. Totally. It's just like whatever. Yeah.
And the other part that people don't understand is our women are not typically violent. So they can purchase makeup. They can purchase other canteen items. Mm-hmm. So if you came in here, you would see that must be a special day. They must be going to Kendra's room because they have their hair curled and they are makeuped up because they're going to see their children.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
That is probably the biggest thing that I see on TV. Like, no.
Yeah, right. Do most people choose to work? I would imagine that probably feels good for most inmates.
Yeah. And they are paid to work.
Okay.
They're not paid a minimum wage because it is prison, but they're paid to work. So a lot of them work so that they have money to make phone calls or buy extra things on Canteen. And it does help get through their day faster.
Yeah, right.
In your room all day.
Yeah.
Of our positions, we are usually completely fully staffed inmate-wise in all of our jobs for inmates.
Yeah.
It just depends on what the personnel is in here as far as inmate. Sometimes we have people, everybody wants to work in the kitchen, and then all of a sudden there's a shift and everybody wants to work in laundry, and then all of a sudden there's a shift and everybody wants to be a janitor. It's very interesting to watch. They get paid as well to go to school, high set class. So even if they need to get their high set, they can't use the excuse of, but I got to go to work in the kitchen. No, you'll get paid to get your high set. So you go to work and get your kitchen.
And then just, will you remind me the kind of the average age and how many moms are there usually? I'm sure that changes, but I know we kind of touched on that before when we spoke.
So the average age in here right now is 38. Mm-hmm. Average length of stay is 11 months. Mm-hmm. And after you and I spoke the last time, I did go back and look, and 92% of our women are mothers.
Oh, wow. That's a lot.
And I guess I can't clarify whether or not that's actually they gave birth, but that's how they identify, is that they are a mom.
Gotcha. Yep.
Really, that's our entire population.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's shift a little bit. Thank you for sharing all of that. That's even that's really enlightening for me, just because it's such an interesting thing. Like, if you don't know, you don't know. And I think that's the experience of most people, you know. Well, it's just such an
exciting and glorious, like when you're watching on TV, it's fun to watch. If you came in here and filmed us in a day, it would be really boring TV.
I don't know. It sounds more like my kind of TV. I watch people like healing trauma and learning how to better themselves. Like, I'll tune into that over the violent riots any day. Okay. And then maybe we can just go a little bit more into like the specific parenting and mothering things that are offered. And Kendra, maybe I'll shift to you just because I know when we spoke, it was like, you rattled off so many things. I was like, oh my gosh, it's so amazing, all the different services and programs that exist to really help support families in this population of people.
So I can, what we offer in parenting right now, we have two parenting classes usually going at the same time. And those are the nurturing parenting course that's offered 0 through 19. For children 0 to 19. And then we have a journaling class. Once you've completed the parenting class, you're able to enroll in the journaling class, where you're able to make a journal for one child at a time, kind of just a history of your time being pregnant. Kind of, it goes into detail about when you were, you know, girl stories, what you went through when you were younger, things that you want to change, how you've healed, all the stuff you're kind of sharing with your kids. Mm-hmm. And then we embellish it. I stock up on stickers and cool paper, and they bring pictures in and they embellish it and make it really cool for their kids.
That's so amazing. I feel like I should do that with my girlfriends. Like, we should have like a monthly. Yeah, it's such a valuable thing.
It really is. Because some of the stuff, and some of it, it's very difficult for some of the ladies, because some of it, they're either weren't there or they don't remember because they were high or they were, you know. So a lot of it is really, I ask, you know, tell them, you can come in and talk to me. We can try to help figure it out. We'll call caregivers. We'll just, so that they don't feel so bad for not being around, or, you know, just trying to help them with that. So some of it is really difficult for them.
Yeah.
But they end up turning out wonderful, beautiful. Yeah. I love them. And then we do, we have a grief group that's coming in through Aspen's Angels, and that has been absolutely amazing. Have rave reviews. I have a new one starting next week on Thursday. And those are 8-week club courses. And then I have, what else do I have? I have the Self-Help Law Center that coming in next month to help ladies with like the parenting plans, the guardianship paperwork or divorce paperwork. Like, I have a lot of those packets, but I can't give them legal advice, you don't want my legal advice. So they come in to help them fill that all out correctly. Do you know what I mean? So that we're
Yeah.
And then I have, we We have FNEP, which is the nutrition class that comes in every Monday morning from 9 to 11, teaching them healthy things and how to cook and good, you know, good nutritional value things.
Yeah.
Then we have, if somebody comes in pregnant, we have prenatal, where we just kind of go over all the things that get them lined up for when baby comes, where's baby going to go, what do you need, all that sort of stuff. Then once baby's here, we have postnatal, so that if they're going through any kind of depression or anything that, you know, because that's probably one of the hardest things I have seen is moms, yeah, they give birth and then they come back here and baby goes to a different state, you know?
Yeah, I can't imagine that would be so hard. Yeah.
Kind of go through that and help them with that. I think that's about all the classes that I have.
Yeah. And yeah, one thing we talked about when we spoke before, Warden Hansen, was that those experiences that are the most difficult and painful, there's often like a rallying of support and community from other women who've been in that position before. Can you talk a little bit about what that looks like and kind of what you see in terms of like a natural group forming to support a mom when she's going through something that hard?
And I think because the majority of our women are moms, that, and have been through similar experiences, not just as a mom, but also with their criminal behavior. When we do have a mom that is maybe getting parental rights terminated, the mom knows in advance this is going to happen. So there's a lot of, you're going to be okay, you're going to be, it'll work out. Lots of support and understanding for what those women are going through. They'll rally around them and support them that way, or give them extra attention, as women do. Those ones are the hard ones, so, and they're very supportive of them. Those ones are the hard ones. The funner ones, I guess you should say, is when they're pregnant. We're all everybody in here is waiting for a baby to be born, and everybody's got advice for each other, the same as you and I would have if you were having a baby. Then I'd tell you all my experiences and all the things that I've gone through, and the same thing happens in here. We had a woman whose water broke on the pot, and you don't know how many, unless you have 50 women telling you how to take care of this woman and get her to the hospital. It was a great experience of, and you don't want to say to 50 women, yeah, I know, I've been there too. Me too. I know what I'm doing.
Right.
You know, when they go and they have a baby, then they know that I know what is happening. So there's a lot of the women ask, has she had it yet? You know what it is? How big is it? How much do they weigh? Yeah. They stop at parenting and knock on the door and ask Kendra.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then it really becomes a very home atmosphere. Yeah. Because everybody's excited that a baby was born and wants to know all the information. And usually the women know way before I do, baby's name.
Yeah.
Baby's weight. She got curly hair. He's got really crazy hair. So
Oh, that's cool. And you had said, we talked about too, like there are, you know, there are different variations of what will happen when a mom comes to prison and she is pregnant and she does give birth. Like sometimes arrangements are made and baby has to go elsewhere right away. Sometimes you mentioned like mom will be released from the hospital, come back 24 hours later or whatever. And then baby also gets to come and visit. Like I remember you saying like at hour 25 that they can be close as soon as possible. Will you tell me a little bit more about what those different scenarios look like?
So a lot of that is based on, again, safety and security and when they go and when the baby is born. But we being MWP staff, work very closely with Family Tree, because Family Tree is in the room, with the inmate when the baby's being born. And then Family Tree helps security staff know that the baby was born and who the caregiver is, so that we can get the baby in here as quickly as possible to mom once the mom is returned to prison. So Kendra and some of her coworkers help a lot with that. It is a requirement that Kendra send me a picture on my phone the moment I was born.
Yes.
When I went through my phone, they would think that I had 720 little kids.
Yeah, totally.
More about once they come back in, what services we provide once they return from the hospital with baby?
Yes. So, like we said, it's based on where baby is going. If it's CPS, like we We had five babies. Was it last year? Yeah. Last year, five babies. It was just crazy. They're all turning one. Yeah, right around now. So if they're CPS, we've got one that's CPS right now that comes in up to three times a week for up to 3 to 4 hours at a time. He's going to be one. So that's been going on for quite a while. But prior to giving birth, or, you know, when they're in the prenatal group, I go to the fabric store. They make those tie blankets, you know. They have all that sort of stuff that, not the tie, but they have different little blankets that they can sleep with. We make tie blankets for the baby to be sent home with. So there's that sleeping with the blankets and then sending them with baby and that sort of thing to kind of keep the scent and the bond.
That's so cool. I love that so much. I remember when you mentioned that before, that just is, yeah. I feel like that's so important. Yeah. You know, maybe we can, this is a good part to mention. I know that some women attempt to breastfeed, but it's pretty difficult and complicated. So maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
I don't know that it's difficult and complicated for them to actually pump when they're in prison. It's difficult, complicated to provide that breast milk to the caregiver, depending on who the caregiver is and where they're at.
Absolutely. Yes.
Right.
So locally, that's easy. They come down every 2 hours and they bring in their milk that they've pumped and we freeze it. And then if their visit is coming in, you know, they get visits three times a week. We're just sending it out to caregiver right there at the visit. But the case that we've had three, I think, this past year that caregiver lives in a different state or farther away where we have to ship it. And that is pricey.
Right. So totally.
That's where and then moms just kind of give up. We're like, yeah, you know, I can't afford it. My mom can't afford it or whoever's caregiver is. So they just give up and they don't breastfeed for very long. But while they're pregnant, we do all the paperwork to get them the pump so that it's ready to go. When they give birth, they've got a pump. They're ready to go.
That's so cool.
They're allowed to, even though it is a scheduled world in here, they're allowed to say to their officer, hey, I need to go pump. And our officers, again, being trauma-informed and trained, they understand. And they're like, oh, get to going. Yeah. Whether it's 2 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they understand that. And so that opportunity they get to do. And again, it's up to the mom whether or not they want to continue providing breast milk or whether they are done playing that. But any woman who's provided milk by pumping, it is work. It's not an easy job.
Yeah, I know. I've done it. Yeah.
Whether you're going to work or whether you're staying at home all day with your kid or whether you're in prison, it's a commitment and it's a lot of work to do. So we don't force them. We don't tell them. Kendra
does. Of course, yeah.
And we give them the pros and cons of pump or don't pump and give them all the education. So it really is their decision whether or not they decide to do that or not.
Yeah. 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 And then I'm curious too, this is shifting gears back a little bit, but when we were talking about the grief support groups, Kendra, is there any, like, if you know that a mom is going to be giving birth and that's probably going to be a hard time, even if like there's still a lot of contact with baby, I imagine it's just a hard thing. Is there any way that you can be like, okay, well, we know that due date is this, so maybe I should enroll in the grief support group because, you know, this is coming? Or is it just sort of like harder to manage than that?
No, absolutely. I get the grief support group in parenting just started within the past few months. So that's new to me, but I do know, like, so there was I do the sign up sheets and I hang them on every pod and people who are interested, they can sign up or not. And, but I, like this past one, I knew of a mom in here that her grandmother, her daughter, and her sister were all killed last summer in a car accident, and she didn't sign up. So I went and found her, and I said, I want you in this group. Like, that is something that is so, you know, so vital for you. So she was in, and she didn't miss a class. She was amazing, and she loved it. So I will find people. If I know situations like that or people that are struggling, heck yeah.
And parenting isn't the only place that we offer grief support, so we all it. There's a couple volunteer church groups that come in and do grief groups based on whatever religion they are. We have Native American grief groups, and then we have 4 mental health staff on duty all the time. So if they really need that extra support right now, we have that grief support that way as well. When we do have a pregnant woman in here and we know that it's baby's almost due, not only are they meeting with parenting, but they're meeting with their mental health counselor as well, just to tackle that. We watch really close for postpartum and what's going on, because it's a pretty scary thing inside a prison when you have postpartum. It's pretty scary in the community, but
yeah.
We are blessed in that manner that we see them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so we can start to go, oh, something's not right.
Yeah, like complete isolation isn't an option there. And then, okay, so these are some of the harder things we're talking about. And I want to ask one more question, and then I want to kind of switch gears to some of the amazing events that you do, and like specifically the visiting environment that is so cool that we've talked about. But one thing I'm just curious before we go there is, when we talk about trauma-informed care, like a lot, you know, it seems like most everyone, if not everyone, operates from a trauma-informed place. So what does the training look like for that? Like, how do you educate the people who work with you to be trauma-informed? I think it's such a new thing and people are just realizing how important it is. And so there are a lot of different approaches to training on that. And I'm curious what yours is.
So we have some formal training on that for our specialty officers. And it's a 2-day training of not only just the trauma, but also gender specific and gender responsive. So that's more of the formal training. But as far as training for all the staff, it's more of an ongoing education. You know, when you first start here, you have to recognize the fact that, one, it's all women in here. That's the first thing you need to know. And that 80% of women inside a correctional facility have had some kind of trauma in their life, whether it's physical or mental or something. The other thing that we really educate people on is what you think my trauma is not really my trauma. So we don't force trauma treatment. We don't force any of that on the inmates, because you and I may see the same accident, car wreck out on the street. It may not affect me at all. It may affect you for the next 6 months of your life. So just because you're a female who's had your baby taken away, may not be traumatizing to that specific inmate. And that's a huge education thing for our staff, for people. Just because you think it's traumatizing doesn't mean that they themselves think it's traumatizing. I like to talk about, if I grew up on the south side of Billings, and that's where I know all my neighbors and everybody, that is not a scary place for me. Mm-hmm. Me as Jenny Hansen with probation and parole vest on walking into that neighborhood, I'm a whole different target than somebody else. Same thing in here. If you have had babies taken away and you've been in and out of prison for the last 10 years of your life, it might not be effective. That may not do anything to you. If this is your first time in prison and this is your first child, and I assume that you're going to be pretty traumatized by that, maybe not. So we really try to pay attention to individualizing that and making sure that that's not just a blanket, we're all trauma, you're all going to take grief group, you're all going to take trauma treatment, you're all going to do this. It's more specified and individualized so that we're making sure the correct needs are met for each individual. But I also like the little things of if I'm sitting in front of an inmate and she's crying, you don't shove a box of Kleenexes in front of their face, because that just means stop crying. Well, maybe she needs to cry. So there's Kleenex is on a desk that she can grab if she needs one. But I don't shove that Kleenex box right in front of her, because that really, and I've watched people do it to not just inmates. If you would start crying right now, it's super uncomfortable. So the first thing I'm going to do is hand you a Kleenex, because that means
tell you to clean it up. So, that's funny, because I always refuse Kleenex when I'm crying. If someone offers it to me, I'm like, I'm just going to cry. everyone who knows me, as you said, they're like, oh yeah, you don't do Kleenex. I forgot. But yeah, it's little things like that. That's really interesting to consider the piece of assuming that something would be traumatic for someone when it's not, because that could kind of be like a break in trust, right? If it's like, oh, you perceive me, you think I should feel this way about something, but I don't. So the fact that I don't, you know, is like that's like a gap in our trust, sort of, in like just knowing that maybe you're judging me now that I'm not feeling traumatized by this.
Yeah. And I think with females specifically, we like to normalize situations. We like to, you know, I think that's why sometimes females are catty towards other females, because maybe you look prettier than me, so I'm going to comment about how ugly your shoes are today. So we try to make everything normal. So if I am saying, well, you need to go to grief group because you just lost a child, and they say, but that's not affecting me, now I made them abnormal. And it's almost that whole trust thing of, what am I different than everybody else? And now that's probably why I'm in prison. And then you got this big
like
mess.
Shame spiral. Yeah. See, that's one of the top reasons that I shouldn't be doing your job. Cause I for sure would like just assume that everyone's hurting all the time. I think I like, that's something I work on in the world is like, nope, they're not everyone is you and like super sensitive. So,
so that's, I get exactly what you're saying. Cause that's exactly how I roll. I'm super sensitive and I feel like I can read people really well, but
yeah,
that may be a fault of mine then that I,
I don't think it's a fault. It's a different perspective. That's where, when you say, how are your jobs? My perspective is different as a warden, as I got to look at it as a whole. Kendra is awesome at what she does, and she can watch who's ever sitting in front of her and know that something's affecting her.
Yeah.
More so than, and that's why we specialize and individualize and get the Kendras in this world.
Right. And that's what you're saying about it being an ongoing education and not just something that you can take a 2-day training and know every right move to make. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about the parenting room where people get to come and just do cool family things like bake cookies and eat dinner and hang out.
So we have our parenting room is kind of set up like an apartment. It has a living room, it has a kitchen, it has a bathroom, and then my office. So it has another smaller room too that when we have double visits at the same time, we're like with a teenager and a mom that could sit in there. There's no real toys or anything, but so they get to come in. I do a grocery list almost every week, kind of what you like and what you want to make for dinner with your kids or what they want to do. I have arts and crafts up the yin yang in there. I've got closets full of stuff for them to do, bracelets and, you know, coloring and painting. And so that's what it looks like when they come in. They get to come in and just be normal, you know, just normal. Lay on the couch and hold each other or hug each other and go make a frozen pizza or whatever they want to, you know, whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
And I know when we talked about that, you had said that's kind of a privilege that is earned over time. Can you talk about what that requires to get to that point?
Yeah. So in parenting, if you're CPS involved, of course, you will start visits right away because you're on a timeline. But if you're not CPS involved, you have to enroll in the parenting class. And you have to be at least halfway through. And I have to know that you're participating, doing your homework and all that sort of stuff. And then we can start setting up the Zooms and the visits in the parenting room. If you quit the parenting class, drop out, you go to FPOD or whatever, your visits are done then. Do you know what I mean? You have to rejoin, go on again. So you have to have completed a parenting class or be halfway through to get visits in parenting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So those are the special visits in the parenting room, and they're very coveted, and it is a privilege. But we offer Tuesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, twice a day on Saturday and Sunday visits where in with general population. So it could be 10 women in there with their 10 family members. That visit in parenting is a privileged special visit. Do you want to talk about once a month Kids Day?
Yes, once a month Kids Day. We just had it last Saturday. So on the third Saturday of every month from 1 to 3, we do a Kids Day where regardless if you're a part of parenting, if you've ever completed a parenting class, you can just sign up and come. And that's where I have a great inmate worker who is very crafty and can bake like no other. So she makes amazing treats and usually monthly themed. So this month was St. Patrick's Day and we had green jello poke cake or whatever and big shamrocks and leprechauns. So kids can be dropped off by the caregivers and they stay from 1 to 3 and it's just mom and kids. And luckily this Saturday was beautiful and they played outside, they played baseball, you know, it was a very good day.
That's awesome.
Turnout. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. How, like, does it go on all day or how,
no,
what's
just
the time?
1 to 3 every 1 to 3. Yep, the third Saturday of every month is 1 to 3.
Yeah. Oh, that's so neat. I love that. Yeah. And that brings me to another thing that I remember talking about before, which is just that holidays are a big deal in terms of card making and communicating with families. And so why don't we just talk about Mother's Day since it's coming up and kind of what that looks like?
So Mother's Day is different in here than like Christmas or any other. Mother's Day is actually not a fun day in here.
Okay.
Because a lot of them can't be moms, or they realize that on that day that they're no longer moms or their kids. From a security standpoint, Mother's Day is not a fun day. There's a lot of tears those days and a lot of But on the good side, they also support each other and they all recognize that it's Mother's Day. So we try to, every Mother's Day, the women get special in here. They all get special treats that the prison supplies. So they'll all get gigantic cinnamon rolls. They get flavored creamer for their coffee that day. So that we try to support them like you would your mom.
Yeah.
And it, that part with them, we try to make it go over easier. We followed that up real quick after May. Then in June, we have our big, huge once-a-year family day so that they have something to look forward to. And family day is for the entire prison. Anybody can bring in 5 family members. Sometimes we adjust that number for the day. And they come in the morning time and they stay until late afternoon. And those days we feed the entire, whoever comes in, dinner or lunch. They have snow cones.
Snow cones.
They have dessert, big fancy cake. We have bouncy houses for the kids. We have face painting for the kids. Family Tree provides all of the, we don't do a cakewalk, we do a book walk. And the moms, grandmas, aunties, everybody comes in. It's probably the funnest day in the prison because of that. But we try to follow May, the month of May, up real close with the month of June with family day. So they can't have that. They have something to look forward to after Mother's Day. Christmas is a whole different story. We have our mail room is usually packed with all kinds of cards either going out or cards trying to come in. Halloween, any other holiday is... Our women make a lot of cards in hobby. They make fantastic like stamped cards with embellishments and jewels, and they make some pretty fantastic cards for their kids, for their family members. So you can always tell that a holiday is coming, that something's coming up, because you see all these fancy cards coming out.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah, and then we also talked about, you know, that all of the art that goes on in there, and that there are some incredible artists that either come in with that gift or they really learn how to become artists and in different modalities. And so I would love for you to tell our listeners a little bit about like the supplies that are available. I know you said that like even the canteen, people can buy their own paintbrushes and things like that. And then also if you would talk about the one of the museums there had an exhibit, or maybe still does.
So the Yellowstone Art Museum comes in and teaches our women different modalities of, sometimes it's chalk, sometimes it's black and white, sometimes it's oil painting, and they bring in those supplies for those people who have signed up to take that class. And then the women have an opportunity to send those art pieces to the Yellowstone Art Museum for purchase, so somebody in the community can walk in and say, I really love that painting, and we say, yes, that's inmate Claire, you absolutely should buy that painting. We have a couple of them that have sold several pieces at the Yellowstone Art Museum, and those inmates get that money back. But they also send a lot of drawings out to their family members, and they can purchase on Canteen for their hobby program canvases, markers, colored pencils, paint. It just depends on what they want to do. We have one right now that's doing some kind of, it's a shaving art where you shave off almost like pencil lead. It's not what it is. And then they draw with those shavings.
Oh, wow.
It's,
sounds hard.
Wow. Yeah. You look at them sometimes and go, how do you know how to do this? It's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, that's really neat. Well, gosh, I mean, I those are most of the things that I've been really curious about, just from working with moms and families, and then, you know, my own curiosity about what the culture is like there. So I don't know that I have a lot more, but I would love to just, you know, ask you to sort of, you know, look at each other and be like, what didn't we talk about that we feel like is important? Is there anything that you feel like was left out? Oh, I know one thing. I know that there's been a recent program created where if both parents are incarcerated, there's been an effort to have dad come to those special family visits as well. And I know that's kind of a new thing. Can you talk about what that looks like?
It's worth test driving. We know that a lot of our inmates are, our female inmates are involved with male inmates, and they commit crimes together. we know that we have a mom here and the dad is at the men's prison, and we know that maybe not they will end up as boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife upon their releases of prison, but there's still a child involved that co-parenting and causes some issues sometimes. If dad gets out before mom and he's got the child, but his family's mad at mom because she went to prison, his family, and so they won't let him talk to the baby or vice versa. There's all this co-parenting problems that Kendra gets to deal with in Zoom calls. So we're test driving if we could teach dad parenting skills and mom parenting skills and then get them in the same place at the same time to have conversations about their child that they share together. And we do have one that came out of the prison. The male came out of the prison. The mom is still here. And we're allowing dad to come and do special visits with mom because they do plan on reuniting once she is out of prison. And how are you going to co-parent this child together and meet the requirements that CPS has put in place because both of them were in prison when the baby was born? So far.
So good.
So very successful.
Very successful.
Oh, that's so cool.
Amazing. Yes, they're doing very good work together. They love this little boy, and this little boy loves mom and dad. So it's perfect when they're all together and watching them feed and bathe and do all the stuff with the little guy. It's perfect. I love it. I'm sure not every scenario will be like that, but this one the first one has turned out great.
For our test drive, having positive.
That's awesome.
Back and it really is positive to watch the two of them. They're also, because of that, learning how to, just like any husband, wife with a child, who's the boss, right? Who's in charge right now? And as this little boy gets older, I'm thinking, oh, I can hardly wait till they say, well, then I'm going to go ask dad. Well, then I'm going to go ask mom.
Right.
We're trying to teach mom and dad how to be dual parents.
Yeah.
Both of them did not have that growing up either. They both came from single parent families. So try to teach them how do you co-parent when you didn't even see that as a role model when you were a child yourself. And those are probably when you asked, what is the fun part of getting up in the morning? Those are the kind of things that's fun. I bet Kendra would say the same thing. What is the challenge of the day going to be? Because I didn't grow up like that. And I don't even know what that challenge is until you sit down and talk with somebody and find out their needs. And you go, oh, yeah, if you didn't grow up with a mom yourself, because he was in prison, how am I going to help you learn how to be a mom?
Yeah.
You didn't have a mom role model. I guess Kendra gets to be your mom role model. You're already 35 years old, but look at this lady, and she's going to help you get through being a mom.
Yeah. And how motivating and hopeful for those parents to be able to work on that together and with their kiddo, because it's like nothing is more rewarding than feeling like you're learning things that maybe you thought you'd never be able to know. You know, and to be given the opportunity to like have that experience and to see your kiddo benefit from the work that each of you are doing together, I would think that would be one of the most powerful motivators to keep doing the work so that you can strive towards something like that. Whereas if you hadn't had that opportunity, it's like hard to strive for something that you don't think is possible or you don't know exists, right?
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
And the majority of women's self-efficacy is pretty low.
Yeah.
So if your self-efficacy is low, how are you ever going to be able to be a mom, even though that innate feeling is, I want to be a mom? One of the things people always ask me is, what's the same thing as the women? All your women say the same thing. They just want to go home to their kids. I just want to get out for my kids. Well, I totally understand that, but what are you going to do this different this time so you can stay out with your kids? What are we going to teach you? What do we need to teach you so that you stay out there in the community with your kids and be a role model for your kids, be a good example for your kids so that we don't get your kids 10 years from now.
Break that cycle. Yep.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Who came up with that idea for that program?
For the father and the mother?
The co-parenting.
Oh, except for like, Gordon sitting in her house at one night.
Yeah. I think it's just, that's so neat.
That's the men's prison runs their parenting program through Montana Correctional Enterprises, and the administrator there and I have a very good working relationship. So when I call her with crazy things, she's like, oh, great idea. So when both prisons buy into it, then it makes it a whole lot easier too. The warden, Solomonson, at the men's prison was like, you're crazy, but if you think it's going to work, it's going to work. So thankfully we have good working relationships to and sometimes my crazy ideas, and then you have a great Kendra to say, Kendra, will you do this?
Kendra, I had this wild idea. Will you start doing it all the time?
Kendra, we're going to bring a guy inmate through the front door of the prison to go visit his girlfriend. Are you good with that?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Good. Well, I think we can wrap up there. And I just am so grateful for both of you taking the time to do this. And I learned a lot just talking to you. And so I know that people listening will too.
Well, thank you for taking the interest in us. That really means a lot to us because we're not what we see on TV. We are not Orange is the New Black or any of the other ones.
Yeah.
And we do work really hard to try to make a difference in these women's lives if they want us to. If they want to help and they want to change, then all of my staff work really hard to try to give them that help that they need, especially Gavin and Tree. They help a ton with that parenting squishy stuff.
Yep. Yeah. And as always, we'll list all the organizations that we talked about in the show notes. So if people want to learn more about Family Tree or how to volunteer or donate or anything like that, we'll have that available, which is always great.
Awesome.
Yes, I appreciate you, Claire. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you to our incredible editor and producer, Brooke Boone Miller, for sharing her gifts with us. She's a mom and she gets it. And for that, we are so grateful. If you are seeking supportive parenting resources, please visit hmhb-lifts.org, an online guide meant to connect Montana families to services and programs throughout the state. It's okay not to be okay. Help is within reach, and you don't have to go this alone. We promise. And if Mother Love speaks to you as much as we hope it does, please consider supporting this project by subscribing to the podcast, sharing it with your network, and or writing us a quick review. We are passionate about getting these stories out into the world, and we need you to help us spread the word. Oh, and just one more thing. We know a lot of moms who are really fired up about creating change in the maternal healthcare world. If you feel inspired to make a donation to this movement, please go to hmhb-mt.org/donate or click the link in the show notes. Even just a $5 or $10 donation can make a huge difference. Imagine a future where mothers and caregivers feel supported, seen, and heard as they carry out the most important work of their lives.